The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Donovan against Lone Steer Incorporated. I think you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. This case is here on direct appeal under 28 U.S.C. 1252 from the United States District Court for the District of North Dakota. Under review is the District Court's decision holding unconstitutional the investigative provisions of the Fair Labor Standards Act. Specifically, the Court's holding that the Fourth Amendment prohibits the use of an administrative subpoena for the inspection of documents, and rather requires that a search warrant be obtained before any documents may be examined. Because some of the briefs here have generated some confusion about the issue presented, I think it would be useful to summarize briefly the background of this litigation. On January 6, 1982, Al Godis, a wage-hour compliance officer, telephoned Applee, a restaurant motel located in Steele, North Dakota, to schedule an inspection for the following day and to ask that certain wage and payroll records be made available for inspection at that time. When Applee's manager informed Godis that the time was not convenient, he rescheduled the inspection for the following week. In the interim, Applee's counsel wrote to Mr. Godis, stating that Applee would not consider the request for an inspection until it was informed of either the nature of the complaint that triggered the investigation or the scope of the investigation. The government responded with a letter outlining the general scope of a Fair Labor Standards investigation and declining to give the reason for this particular investigation. In this letter, the government rescheduled the inspection for 2 weeks hence. The letter also requested Applee to inform the government whether it would decline to permit the inspection so that an administrative subpoena could be obtained in that event. Applee responded that permission would be refused under the authority of Marshall versus Barlow's. And thereafter, Applee was served with a subpoena duces tecum requiring production of specified payroll records at the Department of Labor's wage hour offices in Bismarck, North Dakota. Applee's counsel informed the Department of Labor that it would not comply with the subpoena on the ground that it was invalid under Barlow's. And to date, it has not produced the subpoena documents.
Mr. Horowitz, the Applee suggests that maybe this was really an attempt by the government to get unauthorized entry into the premises. Would you comment on that?
Well, I just don't think there's any support for that in the record. All we know is that they phoned and said that the government phoned and said that it wanted to conduct an inspection the next day. Applee obviously did not feel compelled to comply with this. It simply first stated that it wasn't convenient and then later declined to permit the government to enter.
The question isn't really before us here, of course, but do you think the statutory authority under the Act to enter and inspect the premises is possibly invalid under Barlow's?
Well, it's never come up because this is the general practice of the Labor Department is not to conduct these entries without consent. So they didn't try to do it here. They've never tried to do it.
Do you think it's possibly invalid?
If they did, I think, unlike this case, Barlow's would be quite relevant, and there would be a serious question under Barlow's. The question would be whether Barlow's was distinguishable or not, and it might be difficult to distinguish. Barlow's itself was careful to confine itself to the OSHA context, so arguably it might be distinguishable, but it would certainly be a close case.
Well, did the subpoena here actually request entry?
No. The subpoena specifically said that it was returnable off the premises, that the documents were to be produced at the Labor Department's offices in Bismarck, North Dakota. I should say also in response to Justice O'Connor's original question, the appellee has said in the briefs in this court has kind of characterized the Department of Labor's initial phone call as sort of a demand for entry and try to paint the picture that we're trying to force our way in. That's something that's come up in the course of the litigation. I think if you look at the more contemporaneous discussion of what was going on, the letter that I just referred to that Appley sent to the government, that's reproduced at page 13 of the joint appendix, Mr. Peterson stated, "I represent Lone Steer Cafe. Before we consider your request to conduct an inspection, we would like the following information." So I think at least at the time, everyone understood that this was just a request to enter the premises. It's only later that this has been characterized more as a demand.
May I ask, was the subpoena ever served?
Yes, the subpoena was served.
Did you ever file a motion for contempt or for failing to comply?
We filed, as I was about to say, we filed a petition with the district court to compel appellees to comply with the subpoena.
The judge's order doesn't rule on that, though, does it?
Well, the cases were consolidated, yeah. So the order does rule on it. It's a little cryptic.
But he doesn't mention it.
He doesn't mention
all
it.
All he denies, no. Really, all he says is you have no right to enter the premises.
Well, that's what the order says. So that in the course of the court's opinion, he states that the appellee's contention is that they're not required to turn over these documents in response to the subpoena. So the court seems to have understood that what this case was about was a subpoena, but then when it gets to drafting the order, it just says that government can't enter on the premises. At that point, the government filed a motion to amend the judgment, pointing out to the court that all we wanted was for the documents to be turned over at our offices, and the court didn't really address that very well either. So perhaps the district court didn't exactly focus on what was going on here, but I think it's made clear enough in all the papers that have been filed. When Appley declined to permit the inspection originally, the government responded with a letter that outlined the general scope of the investigation of a Fair Labor Standards general investigation, but declined to give the reason for this particular investigation. And as I said, we requested that Appley inform the government whether it would consent, decline to permit the inspection so the subpoena could be obtained. When Appley declined to permit the inspection, a Department of Labor officer went to the premises on February the 2nd and served them with a subpoena. The Appley brought this lawsuit seeking declaratory and injunctive relief on the ground that the Fair Labor Standards Act was unconstitutional, and quoting from the complaint, insofar as it purports to authorize a warrantless inspection of records by way of administrative subpoena after entry to inspect has been denied. This action was consolidated with the government's action, as discussed earlier, petitioning the district court to compel Appley to comply with the subpoena, and the district court found for the Appley without really explaining why. The court's opinion relied exclusively on Marshall versus Barlow's, and accepted the appellee's contention that the subpoena was invalid under Barlow's.
I didn't find that the court referred to Oklahoma press at all.
No, the court.
Was this pressed upon the court by the United States Attorney?
It certainly was featured quite heavily in the government's motion for summary judgment of the Oklahoma press case, but was not really discussed by the appellee, and the court did not see fit to discuss it either.
So that Judge Van Sickle had Oklahoma press in front
of him? Yes, he did, Justice Breyer. As we've stated in our briefs, we view this as a straightforward case governed by principles that have been well settled by this court.
Mr. Horace, maybe I've already asked it, but I just want to be sure. Not only in his judgment, but also in his opinion, all he mentions is the right to enter. And he didn't write another opinion that somehow didn't get in the papers, did he? Because the strangest thing to me about this case is the judge's total failure to mention anything about complying with the subpoena.
It is certainly strange. At the beginning of the court's opinion, or at least at the beginning of discussing the issues, on page 6, bottom of page 6A, in framing the issue, the court says, the last paragraph there on page 6A, Lone Star asserts the statutory scheme is constitutionally impermissible and that the records described in the administrative subpoena issued in this case need not be produced except in response to a warrant. So the court certainly took cognizance there of the fact that there had been a subpoena issued, and that's what was involved. But then the court just goes on to discuss Barlow's and then kind of falls back onto this discussion of entry onto the premises.
Strange that you suggested summary reversal.
We did suggest summary reversal, but the court did not see fit to act on that suggestion. The case is here today because of the direct appeal provisions of Section 1252 in light of the district court's finding of unconstitutionality, not because this case presents an unsettled constitutional question. I would like, if I might, briefly to emphasize just a few points in this connection. At the outset, let me emphasize again that the only issue presented in this case is the constitutionality of the subpoena duces tecum served upon Appellee, that is, requiring the production of documents off-premises without resort to a search warrant. Perhaps because the validity of such a subpoena is so clearly established by this court's precedent, Appellee and the amici supporting it have sought to cloud this issue by suggesting that this case involves an attempted non-consensual entry onto private premises. This is simply not so. There is no question here of an entry onto private premises without consent, as there was in Barlow's. The government never made any attempt to enter, and it's the Department of Labor's general policy not to make such entries. From the time the subpoena was served, almost every document in the record, perhaps with the exception of the district court's opinion, confirms that this litigation has focused on the validity of the subpoena. Only 1 week after the subpoena was served, Appellee wrote to the government, sent a copy of this letter to the district court, stating that it would not comply with the subpoena because it was invalid under Barlow's. Appellee's complaint, the government's petition to enforce the subpoena, the court's district court's own description of the issue presented in its opinion, and the motions for summary judgment all focus on the issue of the validity of the subpoena. On this issue, Appellee's contention is foreclosed by a long line of precedent of this court. In Oklahoma Press, this court unequivocally held that an administrative subpoena, indeed, in that case, a subpoena issued under the very statute involved here, the Fair Labor Standards Act, a subpoena is not governed by the requirements of the warrant clause. That is, neither a warrant nor probable cause is required for the issuance of a subpoena. The court explained that a subpoena does not involve any actual search of private matters. It is a search only in a theoretical sense, what the court termed a constructive search. The court concluded, therefore, that a subpoena is reasonable within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment if the request is authorized by law, is not indefinite or unduly burdensome, and seeks documents that are relevant to the investigation. This rule has been reaffirmed by this court in Morton Salt and several other subsequent cases, and has been routinely and uniformly applied to administrative subpoenas for the last 40 years. Neither Appellee nor the district court discusses Oklahoma Press and its progeny. No defect in the reasoning of the court in those cases, nor any reason for concluding that those cases were wrongly decided has been suggested. The sole basis for the decision below and for Appellee's argument is the assumption that this long line of cases has been wiped off the books, overruled sub silentio by Barlow's. There's absolutely no basis for this assumption. Barlow's has nothing to do with this case or with Oklahoma Press. Barlow's involved an actual search, an entry onto a manufacturer's private business premises, and a search of those premises for evidence of safety and health violations. This is the precise sort of investigative tool with which the court in Oklahoma Press contrasted a subpoena and drew a distinction. Barlow's did not suggest any erosion of the traditional distinction between subpoenas and actual searches. Indeed, Barlow's relied heavily on C versus City of Seattle, an earlier case where the court had established a warrant requirement for fire inspections, inspections that required an entry onto private premises. In the course of that decision, however, the court expressly reaffirmed the distinction drawn in Oklahoma Press between subpoenas and actual searches, and reaffirmed the standards set forth there under which such subpoenas are to be judged. Barlow's and following C did not interfere with these standards. Moreover, the problems with OSHA inspections that primarily concerned the court in Barlow's, that is, the unbridled discretion of officers in the field to conduct inspections and the unlimited nature of the search involved, do not exist with subpoenas. The subpoena is not open-ended. It specifically identifies the documents sought. The subpoena is not left to the unbridled discretion of the officer in the field. It may be issued only by the wage hour administrator and enforced only by resort to adversary court proceedings. In short, nothing in Barlow's casts any doubt on the continued validity of Oklahoma Press or on the validity of the subpoena returnable off-premises that was issued in this case. Thus, to repeat, we believe that well-settled Supreme Court precedent clearly controls the disposition of this case and requires reversal of the judgment below. Unless there are any questions, I will reserve remainder of my time.
I have one. Mr. Horowitz, again, I don't think it's really raised here, but do you think there are any limits in addition to those spelled out in Oklahoma Press on the government's subpoena power? Could a person whose records are being subpoenaed, for example, seek a protective order from the court on the grounds that he'd been singled out or was being harassed and therefore the subpoena wouldn't issue? Are there any limits?
I'm not sure whether the Fourth Amendment would give any protection against sort of being singled out. It might be that the Due Process Clause or something could have some sort of selective prosecution kind, but I would think it would be a difficult standard to meet, certainly.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. First of all, this is not a simple subpoena case. This is such a characterization is misleading and erroneous and somewhat glib, and it's made by government appellate attorneys from afar. Those who have been directly involved with this case, including the district court judge, were intimately aware of the facts. The issues basically involved entry. And if you look at the facts, and the facts were stipulated, there were, at the outset, unilateral scheduling of an inspection appointment date.
Mr. Peterson?
Yes.
Where do we find the stipulation in the briefs or the appendix?
I believe it's in the...
Is it in the appendix somewhere?
Yes, it is in the appendix, Justice Rehnquist.
Page 11.
Right. The Labor Department basically was informing Lone Steer that it was about to enter and inspect the premises, question employees, and generally conduct its normal investigation.
Did they enter?
Yes, they did, ultimately. The issue became...
When did they enter the premises?
They entered, I believe it was on February 2nd
what is that
of 1981.
To this case?
Excuse me?
Was that when the hearing was had?
They entered following the institution of a lawsuit by Lone Steer to get a declaratory judgment on Section 11.
Well, does that apply to this case?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
Is it in the record?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
The entry.
The Labor Department, a compliance officer, Mr. Godis from Bismarck, together with some high-ranking Labor Department official flown in from Denver entered the lone steer to attempt to conduct the investigation on the premises, attempting to show that Section 1111.
You now say they attempted to enter.
Well, they entered and attempted to conduct the investigation.
Well,
isn't there a difference between entering and attempting to enter?
They entered the Lone Steer Cafe in Steele, North Dakota, and sought to conduct an investigation
the cafe,
there.
Cafe, they entered it?
They did enter it.
And they were excluded.
No, they
were. And they were turned away.
They were turned away.
Right.
Mr. Peterson, you used the word enter as if to give almost a feeling of breaking down the door. Your paragraph 10 of the stipulation says that approximately 10:30 a.m., Godis and Hill entered the Lone Steer establishment to attempt to conduct an investigation. They asked for Mrs. White and were told she was not available but expected shortly. They were offered some coffee and waited in the lobby area. After 20 or 30 minutes and Mrs. White had not appeared, Mr. Godis served an administrative subpoena on employee Karen Arnold. Do you mean by the use of the word entered, kind of entered against the will of the parties?
No, Your Honor. And I certainly did not seek to give the court that impression. If I could give you a short scenario of what exactly happened.
Well, is it something different from the stipulation in paragraph 10?
No, it is not, Your Honor. It's basically in the stipulated facts. We had two instances where Lone Steer's attorney told the Labor Department that they did not have authority or consent to conduct its investigation on the premises of Lone Steer.
Are you suggesting they had no authority to enter to serve the subpoena?
No, Your Honor. Definitely not.
You're not arguing that.
No, we're saying...
That's a public place. Anyone could enter it, couldn't they?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
And when, how else would they serve the subpoena except to enter it?
Your Honor, in the first instance, what they sought to do was to conduct the investigation.
Well, we're not concerned about what they thought to do. What did they do?
They informed us by way of a letter that they were going to attempt to conduct the investigation, and if they were prohibited, that was the word used, if they were prohibited from conducting the investigation, they were going to leave an administrative subpoena.
But Mr. Peterson, the stipulation goes on and says they did properly serve the subpoena.
Yes, Your Honor.
The subpoena commands the production of a person to testify and to bring with them certain records to the federal building in Bismarck.
Yes, Your Honor.
Why didn't you do that?
Your Honor, at that point, prior to that, the issue was under Section 11 whether or not the inspection powers of the Labor Department were limited by the Fourth Amendment as interpreted by Barlow's. And the issue before the court, as the court perceived it and as we perceived it, we wanted a declaratory judgment as to whether or not the Labor Department did have the right to conduct the investigation without the consent of the owner.
Do you understand the district court to have ruled that you did not have to comply with the subpoena?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what reason did he give for that ruling?
He did not really give a reason for that ruling other than to say that the inspection power under Section 11 of the Fair Labor Standards Act was clearly, in his mind at least, subject to the warrant clause under the Fourth Amendment, as interpreted in Barlow's.
He talked only of entries onto the premises.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the subpoena asked for production elsewhere.
The subpoena,
is there any reason why you shouldn't comply with a subpoena to produce elsewhere?
The subpoena, as we understand the subpoena, is an enforcement device as a part of Section 11's conferring of inspection powers to enter and inspect the premises.
Had they not first tried to get in, would you be making the same argument?
I believe, Your Honor, that either Section 11 is subject to the Warren Clause or it isn't. I believe that it is subject to Section 11. And the Labor Department did not are left undisturbed, the judgment with respect to entry. The judgment with respect to entry right now stands at Section 11 is subject to the warrant clause.
The same type of subpoena is issued to another corporation, which has only been in business a week. Would you be arguing the same thing?
I would argue.
I said only been a week because, I mean, I don't want anything in the past having anything to do with it.
I would argue there, Your Honor, that a subpoena is subject to Barlow principles. A subpoena can be enforced under Barlow principles. And it would be subject to the...
So they have no subpoena power.
Yes, they have subpoena power, which I believe are limited by Barlow's
principles.
How
would they exercise the subpoena power?
I think what this court has to do, consistent with Barlow's, is to look at the entire investigatory scheme, see that a subpoena is being used, and enforce in federal district court, and the test there would be whether or not the subpoena and an enforcement would be the functional equivalent of a warrant.
And every subpoena would have to have court approval.
Ultimately, in an enforcement action. It could have in this case.
Well, why is this type of subpoena need court action and others don't?
Because of the particular way the statute is postured in terms of entry.
This particular statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, Mr. Peterson, doesn't Oklahoma Press clearly say that subject to the requirements spelled out there, administrative subpoenas can issue without the concerns expressed in Barlow's?
Your Honor,
Barlow's didn't overrule Oklahoma Press.
No, I do not believe so, Your Honor. I believe that Oklahoma Press publishing was perhaps altered to a certain extent, and perhaps certain gray areas were filled in that a subpoena could issue, but the test of reasonableness would involve Barlow substantive principles. For example, the issue of probable cause, limiting properly the scope of the investigation to the purpose of the investigation.
Well, you have to read a lot into Barlow's to think that, don't you?
No, Your Honor, I didn't.
Deal with papers and records.
To the extent that the Labor Department there sought certain, I believe it was, health accident reports and so forth that are required by the OSHA law. And an inspection was sought of those documents.
Well, did Barlow's even cite Oklahoma Press?
No, it didn't, Your Honor. However, in footnote 22, you pointed out that delineating the scope of a search with some care is particularly important where documents are involved. And at a certain point, you indicated it is the Secretary's position, which we reject, that an inspection of documents of this scope may be effected without a warrant.
Well, you can get relief with respect to the scope of a subpoena under Oklahoma Press. Under Walling.
We believe, Your Honor, that because of the entry provisions of this particular statute, Section 11, which there is no question in my mind, there's no question in the district court's mind, and apparently there's no question in the Labor Department's mind, is subject to the warrant clause under Barlow's, it's very difficult for me to then say, Section 11 is subject to the warrant clause, however, the subpoena isn't, which is the enforcement device. I believe that essentially the cases are the same, Barlow's and Lone Steer. The only difference occurred when entry was denied and an enforcement mechanism under a particular statute was utilized. In the Barlow's case, it involved a compulsory process to enter. And as I read Barlow's, the Labor Department did not contend that that compulsory process was the equivalent of a warrant, you did indicate that it could be viewed as such in one of your footnotes. The same is true in this particular case. We have to look at the enforcement mechanism of Section 11. And in this case, it is a subpoena that is issued by the Labor Department itself without regard to probable cause and without properly limiting the scope of the investigation to the purpose or the probable cause involved. Again, I would have to iterate and reiterate that the case involved a declaratory judgment at a particular time on February 1, 1981. There was a dispute as to whether or not the Labor Department had a right to come in and conduct an investigation over the objection of an owner. When Lone Steer objected twice through its attorney that you cannot come in without a warrant or it's a functional equivalent, the Labor Department then cited in its letter its inspection powers under Section 11 to enter and conduct an inspection. At that point, there was a dispute, as far as the district court was concerned, as to whether or not the Labor Department did, in fact, have a right to enter and inspect. Following the initiation of that lawsuit, the Labor Department, despite all these protestations through the legal counsel and through the court system, the Labor Department still sought to conduct that inspection on the premises of Lone Steer.
What you say is basically you're entitled to a declaratory judgment that would say the Labor Department doesn't have the authority to enter and inspect. Without the consent of the owner, notwithstanding that we might resolve the subpoena question in favor of the government. You see them as two distinct issues, I take it.
Yes, they are two distinct issues, but if Section 11 is subject to the warrant clause under a Barlow's test type of analysis, it seems clear to me that you have to also apply that analysis to the enforcement mechanism of that right under Section 11. In fact, the Labor Department is saying it is seeking to inspect the documents under the subpoena under Section 11. They are citing Section 11 and Section 9. And I seriously question whether or not the Labor Department can conduct an investigation without utilizing the authority of Section 11. Which is a right to enter provision. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Thank you. Do you have anything further, Mr. Horowitz?
No, I have nothing further, unless there are any questions.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted.
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until tomorrow at 10 o'clock.